So I've been incredibly blessed by all the testimonies we've heard back from Coralie and from Mary about going and doing mission abroad around the world and fulfilling Jesus's commission to us to go out, preach the gospel. And hearing it from people who are doing it in really uncomfortable situations. You know, I've known Coralie for decades now. We've got houses in the same street. And Coralie is not a highfalutin preacher who tours regularly and, you know, has a private jet because it's the only way her body can sustain it as she's out on mission. She is a. Well, not yet, anyway. But she is a hardworking, diligent, normal person who is going out of her way to serve God and doing incredible things in foreign nations outside of her comfort zone, relying entirely on the Holy Spirit. And, you know, that to me is more testament to the power of the Bible and its relevance today than anything I see from most preachers or television representation of what Christianity is. It's about people who just are so moved in their hearts that they're willing to obey what's written in a book from thousands of years ago and know that they're doing something that draws them closer to God, who is real in their lives and can transform not only what they've experienced in life, but they can share that with others and see other lives transformed. And so I wanted to go back to the most dramatic commission or preach that Jesus gave while he was on earth. Because Jesus is a real figure. He wasn't a, you know, storybook person. He walked the earth. He was among us. He was born just like you and me. It just happened to be 2,000 years ago. So if we're reading the words of Jesus, and there, you know, I've been in the past over how. Morning, morning. I've been over in the past how incredibly reliable the scriptures are. I've particularly done it probably with the youth rather than in here. But the Bible, from a historical perspective, is the most pristine piece of historical literature that we've got. So it is accurate to an incredible degree. Maybe I'll touch on that a little bit. So they found, they had the canon, which is the Bible that we read from, and it was accepted gatherings of the teachings of the time when Jesus was around and way before that, whereas the Jews were writing down their history. It was all gathered together. And so we have a collection of books now that we put together into the modern Bible that is written over these hundreds and thousands of years. And the version that we've got these days are always being, or not always being called, are called into question by people who don't really know. But if you go back and look at it from a historical perspective, we've got more copies accurately copied between the start of the Bible and now than any other bit of literature, any other bit of written word in the world. The work that was done from I've forgotten the word for a bloke who writes, a scribe's perspective is unparalleled. So to the extent that they found, so we've got our modern day Bible and they found then the Dead Sea Scrolls, which were in clay jars written on papyrus, buried in a cave, untouched by anybody for, I can't remember how old they were now. Again, my memory's 5 minutes. But it's something like they were found 80 years ago and they dated them back to pre-Christ times. See, it's the oldest bit of writing, or it's one of the oldest bits of writing we have, let alone of any language. But it is a tract from the Old Testament, and word for word is exactly the same as the modern day Old Testament that we have these days. So the words have been unchanged in those thousands of years. So like down to syllables down to, you know, punctuation. It's really remarkable. So the scribes, humans that have come before us, have written down copies of the Bible again and again, not changing a word in it. So we can really rely that this is a, you know, what humans were experiencing back then is what, and what they wrote down is the same as what we're reading today, which is incredible. And so if we go back to just when Jesus was on the earth and look at that, we have the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus is out. He's been working Israel, Palestine, preaching a new truth to humanity that he didn't say it outright very often at all, but he was God incarnate. So he was God come alive, and he was preaching to the people in and around the hills, the towns, the villages in his area. And people were traveling to come and hear him. And towards the end of his ministry, and it was only a short period where he was actually out there speaking and visiting and talking, 3-year window, people were hearing, they were seeing miracles, they were believing what he was saying, and they were coming in droves to listen to him. And, you know, a lot of what Jesus did initially was a practical help for people who were suffering. So if you were ill, you were sick, you were injured, then Jesus would come in, and the first thing he would do would meet your physical needs. So he'd heal you. And we've got, again, testimonies in the Bible of people being healed in dramatic ways. In fact, bizarrely, his first miracle was just so that people had a good time at a party. he made sure that the hosts didn't lose face, because it was public disgrace if you ran out of wine at a wedding. I mean, today it's bad enough. Back then it was like a cultural end. You were just no more. And so he made sure the party went on. He got the water turned into wine so that everyone could continue enjoying themselves at the wedding. Very practical steps in making sure that humans can still continue being humans and still and yet learn something about the supernatural, about God, about where they came from. That's outside the realm of the normal conversation. God was practical. Jesus was practical. But he was also speaking about things that were supernatural. And so from that, those first, you know, bits of ministry where he was very practical, he was hands-on, he was helping people where they're at, and he was encouraging people with words that were transforming their lives. He was telling them truths about themselves that they had never told anybody, they were ashamed of, that they were scared to put out loud. And he was just saying little sharp words that were transforming individuals. And those individuals were then taking that to heart and could not keep quiet about it. And so they were doing a lot of the spreading of the word. But then towards the end of his ministry, he starts getting a bit more public, starts taking the greater stage. And one of the greatest bits of preaching that he did was on the Mount. And we call that the Sermon of the Mount. And he said, he gave us in that preach incredibly difficult things to absorb and learn and understand and you know, embed in our hearts and create our own attitudes around how we treat others in this world. And I have no idea why they're called this, but they're called the Beatitudes. Anybody else know why they're called Beatitudes? I can only think that it's something to do with, like, be attitude. No, it's not working, is it? I don't know. It'll be something to do with the words. The etymology of words is something that I'm not a great studier of, but there'll be something in there. But I just like the fact that it's be attitude, yeah? When we're starting to encourage somebody, we often said, you know, work on your attitude. You've got to build yourself up, got to get fired up. So I'm saying, Jesus was out there saying, be attitude. That's what I'm interpreting. So that's the etymology, according to John. So he's got these written down in Matthew 5 and 7, and they are incredible things. Some of them quite difficult to hear and absorb and agree to. But they are really good. So let's just start reading a few of these. So Jesus is out there on the hills. And seeing the multitudes, he went up on a mountain. And when he was seated, his disciples came to him. So he's got his 12 disciples seated around. They're probably doing a bit of crowd control. I'm managing, thanks. Doing a bit of crowd control. You know that his disciples pretty much were called in to do anything that Jesus needed done, whether that was fishing or cleaning nets or pushing a boat out so we could preach from the water, or feeding 5,000 people with five loaves and two fish. He got his disciples to do everything. So they're on the mountain with him. He was seated and his disciples came to him. Then he opened his mouth and taught them, saying, bless you. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. So just take a few of those. Blessed are the poor in spirit. So poor in spirit, to me, just sounds like someone who's a bit weak. Someone who is struggling to be bold, struggling to go out and share their faith, their beliefs. Someone who is not sure whether they are strong in their beliefs or if they're weak. They may be changing their mind when they hear things. They may not be confident in what they understand. And they are blessed in Jesus' eyes. Jesus thinks they are valuable enough to mention in the first part of his most powerful speech. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. The poor in spirit are going to inherit the kingdom of heaven. Morning, morning. So who in here has ever felt poor in spirit? And I can say that right now I'm feeling pretty poor in spirit. So I'm very pleased to know that I shall inherit the kingdom of heaven, because that's quite a large inheritance. And I also like the word poor in here as well, because poverty is something that is very much in Jesus' focal point. He doesn't like poverty. He doesn't call anybody to live in poverty, and he wants to help people out of it, but he doesn't give you money. He will make sure you are fed and clothed, that you have friends around you who can support you, and he puts you in families that will make a difference to you and give you a grounding. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. So that's something that's good to hear as well. If you are merciful to others, then you will receive mercy. So if you look at the Old Testament, we've got a really long record of people failing. That to me is just what the Old Testament is. It's a record of a load of rules written down and how many times and how badly humans can fail to meet them. And these are well-equipped people. They're living in good situations some of the time. They've got a strong community around them supporting them, and yet they fail again and again and again, to the extent that they are throwing away what they know about and have experienced from the real God, to the extent that they'll turn and put their faith into a golden cow, or a pole, a wooden pole that's carved in a special way. This is just messing up on a new level. And we are doing it today as well. It's not like humans have changed that much that we've got it sorted now, but we mess up all the time. And that record of failure is really important, because it just repeats and embeds in our minds that actually this isn't something we can just do and achieve through hard work. This is only something we can receive by believing it and not thinking we're good enough to do it, but accepting that we're being given it, that it's a gift, that we are made righteous and we're receiving this mercy purely on the basis that Jesus is doing that for us. It's not something we can earn. You can't earn your way into heaven. You can't work harder at being a good person and get there. It's purely by sitting back and saying, I can't be perfect. I'm not going to make the grade. Therefore, I need you, Jesus, to help me get into heaven. And that's what we're looking for here, is to try and get to that point where we are back in communion with God. We are rescued. We can sit with Jesus and have a conversation without, tearing the skin from our bones in shame and embarrassment at how bad a life we've led. It's so that we can stand with Jesus arm in arm, happy, and tug on his sleeve and get interrupt him and say things directly into his ear that you want to, that your creator can be that personal to you. And that's what's being said here. So Just be merciful. Everyone else around you, as a hint, they're just as much of a failure as you are, just as much of a failure as all the history of the Old Testament. You know, 4,000 years of written failure. That's the same as you, and that's the same as the person next to you. We can't make it ourselves. But if you realize that, it's far easier then to start being merciful with those around you. It's like, what right have I to judge anybody? You know, I'm not going to make the grade. No one is going to make the grade. They're not going to make the grade. I've messed up in the past. They're going to mess up in the future. Let's be merciful. Let's show grace. And that's exactly what God demonstrated to us. He had this record of failure, and he decided, right, I'm going to have a way through this that's going to be transformative. Money, money. And so instead of in the Old Testament where God demonstrated a bit of mercy for the individual, he says, I'm going to put a plan in place to save the whole of humanity. It's going to be open to everybody. You don't have to come through the perfect genetic line from the kings of Israel. You don't have to be born into the kingdom. You can come from anywhere and everywhere, be related to anybody and anything, have done anything anywhere, and you can still receive this grace from Jesus that will get you into the kingdom of heaven. So be merciful and you'll get into the kingdom of heaven. This is, understand that you can't make it, you're on your own, and you'll get there. So, blessed are the pure in heart. Ooh, that's a tricky one. Anybody here pure in heart? Well, I think I've got pretty good intentions. It's just the outcomes don't typically match up. My behavior isn't quite what I intended my behavior to be all the time. So, you know, I have purity somewhere in my heart. I'll give it that much. But I can't say that I am pure in heart. I do get jealous. I do get angry. I do lose my temper. So, yeah. But I'm blessed for that little bit of purity. And that means that I will see God. Well, that's pretty exciting. So if you've got a smidgen of purity in your heart, take it on board that yes, you have the option to get into heaven. You have the option to be cast as righteous, and you get the option to see God. And that, you know, that always reminds me of the story of Moses in the Old Testament, who was supposed to be the only person of the Israelites who saw God up on the mountain, where he was given the laws that everyone was going to fail at. And he came down from the mountain, and his face was shining white. He had a glow about him that was nice. I must have said a really good thing then. He had a glow about him. He's the Israelites at the bottom of the mountain. Moses! Moses! So Moses comes down off the mountain, and he's got a shiny face. He's been looking at God. And you know, I always think about, you know, if most people who saw God in the Old Testament died, like they just dropped dead from it. They couldn't cope with it. But we managed to have Moses, who'd done some good things. He also did some bad things. And he was able to actually see God and come down and be changed, transformed, transfigured, you know, visibly, physically, in when he was talking to people. And so if we go and see God, that probably means we're going to get shiny faces. That's quite exciting. Who wants to have a shiny face? Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. So this is something that is a bit more challenging. Blessedness for righteousness' sake. How many people here have shared what they believe and been knocked back by it? Yeah. And had a look of disdain, look of like, yeah. That happens. If you talk about Jesus often, you'll get that look, won't you? And you know suddenly you've gone down in someone's estimation, and they may not swear at you publicly, but they're probably doing it at home in conversation with their mum later. Yeah. And sometimes, if you're bold enough, they'll do it to your face and may even spit at you. Erman probably has more testimony of, he's done more street evangelism. Phil has as well. You probably have seen the attitude come out a bit more visibly and virtually. So that is persecution for righteousness' sake. So if you've ever been bold enough to share your faith or your belief or what you think the right thing to do is in a situation, and that, you know, has not gone well. You've been cast out of someone's life, maybe. That is persecution for righteousness' sake. And, you know, this is the line here. For theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. So the kingdom of heaven is going to be filled with people who've upset their neighbors. It's going to be filled with people who said something that upset someone. And I know, you know, I had great neighbors who didn't believe in God. And you know, they were asking me about faith. And I blurted out so badly. You know, they asked me quite frankly, well, so that means that you believe, because my mum doesn't believe in God, that she's going to go to hell. And I said, yeah. Didn't sugarcoat it at all. You know, what? Didn't try to be subtle or encouraging. Just said, yeah. And for me, afterwards, I was like, oh my goodness, that is the worst thing I could possibly ever have said. And, you know, that damaged the relationship for a little while. But thank goodness, that word God used to transform my friend's life. She became a Christian. And off the back of that, her sister also became Christian. Her sister is now running church groups in south of England, and she's been all around the world, and she's been in the White House, and you know, she's spoken faith to people. So, you know, no matter how much I thought I'd messed up, it was perhaps a little seed, a little road on her journey into becoming you know, a righteous, shiny-faced person who's going to be with me forever in heaven. So, you know, that bit of discomfort that I suffered for putting my foot in it and saying the wrong thing, and, you know, that has been credited to me as righteousness. Unfortunately, I'm still going to get into the kingdom of heaven. So, you know, be bold. Don't be timid. Expect some upset. Do it anyway. Just do it anyway, because it's going to be credited to you as righteousness. You're going to get to heaven, and possibly that other person who's been upset and mad at you and changed their depiction of you will be in there with you as well. So it's good to do it. And now all of this, you know, what I've actually put on the slide, these things are difficult to implement. Maybe they're to actually get them into your head straight, you have to regularly go back over them and saying, what is my attitude? Am I being merciful, or am I judging people? Am I looking at them and seeing Jesus instead of them? You know, am I doing what God does for us? And it's also about, you know, when we come into church on a Sunday morning, it's not about being the polished version of ourselves all the time. It's about being real with each other, about saying where we're at, what our needs are, where we've messed up, and get some encouragement from each other, and get some attitude from each other to be able to go back out and continue working. And if we come back and just say, yes, I'm fine, yes, I'm polished, I'm great, then we're never going to get the insight, that spiritual rhema word that can transform our lives, because we don't give each other the option to say it. So let's continue being honest with each other. Not polished. And, you know, if we are coming in here polished, then we are trying to put on a persona of holiness. And, you know, Jesus said it here, we're going to fail at being holy. We're not going to make the grade by trying to be holy. We're going to make the grade by being real. And worthiness, if we're worthy, it means that we think we're good enough to get into heaven. And we definitely don't want that, because we're not good enough to get into heaven. Only Jesus is good enough to get us in. And a healthy church will encourage godliness. So we're encouraging each other to be more like God. But we're not judging each other when we fail. And we are not telling people to fake it till we make it. We're telling people to be real. But we're pointing out the direction. You know, I know that you can get better if you head in this direction. I know that your life will be better if you head in this direction. I don't expect you to be there now. I just want you to walk in the right, you know, take the next step. It's like eating an elephant one small bite at a time. You don't start by saying, I'm going to eat a leg. You start by, you know, nibbling your way at it. And that's how we become better humans. We start to become more influential in our lives. We start to become more powerful in sharing the good news that Jesus gave us. And that's what I want from a healthy church. We're all broken people being transformed by grace, not through something we deserve, but something that was given to us. We're all being transformed. Where we are on that transformation journey is different and changing all the time. Sometimes we'll be ahead of our neighbor, sometimes we'll be behind. And you know, one night we can go to bed ahead and we can wake up in the morning with a foul attitude and be behind. It's not gonna change instantly. We're polishing and refining. So I can finally move to the next slide, please, Cliff. Cliff, let's try another slide. So as part of this, Matthew 5, verse 13. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. And this is particularly relevant to people in context in the time of Jesus. Being salt doesn't mean a lot to us, so we can unpick that a little bit. At the time, salt was one of the most precious minerals on earth. If you were without salt, it meant that you had to kill, capture, or pick your food and eat it that day. And then the next day, you'd be up picking, hunting, finding your food and eating it for that day as well. As soon as we figured out what salt could do for meat and for fruit, jam, suddenly we had a sustainable food source that would survive for a long time. And we could, you know, make our lives a bit easier. We didn't have to struggle every day, toil, you know, right from failure to meet the standard in the Garden of Eden. We'd been working that soil and working every day to try and feed ourselves. We discovered salt, and it's powerful, and it was you know, incredibly useful stuff. It still is today, but we used to have it come pre-packed in our little plastic cases. There's salt in there, in all your ham and bacon and everything like that, but you know, we don't have to actually put it on ourselves, but salt is still really valuable. And so at the time, salary, the word salary that the Roman soldiers earned, actually start with sal. Money, money, you found it. Well done. No guidance. Yeah, so the word salary starts with sal, which was the Latin word for salt. So the word salary and the way we earn, actually Roman soldiers could receive some of their salary in salt rather than in gold coins, because the Romans were very proud of their gold coins, had the head of Caesar on their coin. It was very good. But actually, when it came to it and you didn't have anything in the cupboards or that was going to last the day, you couldn't rub the gold on your fish to make it last the next day. You put salt on it. And so it was very useful to have some salt in the cupboard. And God, Jesus, is calling us to be salt. So he's calling us to provide longevity to the things that will sustain the people around us. So he's asking us to be salt to people. The most real, raw, normal, everyday substance that actually without, we would have very, very much worse lives. And this is exactly what Jesus is to our lives. You know, without Jesus, it's like every day we're fighting a battle. There is no respite. There's no peace. There's no calmness of mind. We're always fighting. We're always working hard. Actually, when we do receive Jesus and we can relax into his presence and know that he's there to turn to, that he's that open ear all the time and that wise voice that will give us the encouragement we need when we need it, there is very little in life that will give you respite from those troubles and traumas of life. Once you've got Jesus, once you've got that relationship, oh, it's a relief. It's a very, very good thing. So provide that to others. Be salt to the world. And light as well. If there is no light, it can be a very depressing place to be. Every time winter comes around, I put my big lamp on in the office because without it, I sit in the dark and I feel very depressed very quickly. And I know that Jane's attitude to life changes in the seasons as well. It's a glorious feeling when spring comes along. Suddenly the mornings are light again and you're not getting up and getting dressed in the cold and the dark And actually, you've got a crack of sunlight through the curtains for the first time of the year. It's a glorious feeling. And it's that light, that brightness in life that Jesus is asking us to be for those who are living in darkness. They're living without his knowledge, his wisdom. They don't have that guidance. Actually, we can provide that with our boldness in just saying the right thing at the right time to the right people. We can provide that light, that crack of sunlight through the curtains that can transform their day, can transform their week. Week, their month, their life. So be salt, give them longevity, give that longevity to those around you, and be light, give them that instant boost that they need to get back on top of things. And gold, is valuable, it's precious, but it doesn't go back one. But gold can't be used on food. And it's a means of exchange. It's a way that we trade with each other. But actually, if you're paying for something with gold, it's useful to the other person, but it doesn't help them there and then. It doesn't help them directly. It's much more useful to provide their needs where they're at. And that's why Jesus fed people. That's why Jesus was practical, but also why Jesus healed people, because it transformed them physically. And that's why Jesus gave them not gold, but the words. And so, I think that being salt and light is better than giving someone money, better than giving someone gold. Now on the next slide, gold is still very useful and it'll get you through some difficult situations. Without gold, we wouldn't be sending missionaries to other parts of the world. So let's not denigrate it entirely, but in your relationships, in your conversations, be salt and light. Also, within the attitudes, it says, be perfect. It's like, what? How on earth am I going to be perfect? In Matthew 5, 48. Let's read it. This is where I do need my glasses. There we go. Therefore, you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. Now, that is seemingly in contrast to what we've heard previously. And in fact, God, we know that the scribes writing this down were writing down what they'd heard said to them. And these are all Jesus' words. And Jesus has just been saying in the same speech, you're not going to make it. The kingdom of heaven is for those who are meek, who are weak in spirit, who are poor in spirit, poor as well. It's for everybody who struggles in life. But then also at the end of it, he finishes off with, therefore, you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. And he's saying that this is how you're going to be in heaven, potentially. But also he's saying that, how do you become perfect? Because that's what's needed to get into the kingdom of heaven. You need to be perfect. You can't go into the presence of God and survive without being perfect. That's like trying to put crazy strong magnets together. The same poles, you can't push them together with really strong magnets, can't you? They're always repelling. And if you try and get into the presence of God while you're not perfect, you're always going to be repelling. God can't be around sin, and sin can't be around God. It's just one of the rules of the universe. And so you have to be perfect to be able to be attracted to God, to get magnetized to God in that same way. And the only way that we can be perfect as humans is by, it's not a trick, but it's probably a legal maneuver. It's a clause in our contract that the judge is saying, okay, instead of judging you on your behavior, because your behavior needs to be perfect as well as everything else about you, instead of judging you on the purity and perfection of you as an individual, I'm going to add in this little clause. I'm going to stand in your stead, a proxy. Has anyone heard of proxy? Use that word regularly. The most common modern day thing I can think of a proxy is a VPN. Has anyone heard of a VPN with your computer? It helps you get around things on a computer. So if you install a VPN, it's maybe just to keep you safe while you're on the internet. So it stops anybody else who's reading your traffic on the internet from reading what you're doing. A VPN protects you, your location. So if you're going onto a website, if you're a Chinese missionary and you're going to a website on Christianity, it's very dangerous because the government can read where you're located. They can find out bits of information about you, and they can come back and maybe persecute you. It's not so much of an issue for us in this country, but it's quite important to hide your location. And some of the training at Vision School give are about making sure you're never giving away location and times and dates. And so a VPN can help you do that when you're on the internet. And the way that it works is by having another computer that you connect through from your computer. You're talking to one computer in particular. And so everybody then who's trying to find out where you're from is seeing where that computer that you're connecting through is instead of where you are. So your location is hidden. So you've got something that everybody else sees, even though you're doing the talking. So it's a bit like Wizard of Oz behind the curtains. You're not talking to the big mechanization in front of you, you're actually talking to the man behind the curtain, the man in the back. It's a bit like that. And our proxy, our VPN in the courtroom is Jesus. So the judge is sitting in the chair judging us to see if we're going to get into the kingdom of heaven. And instead of seeing us in the stand, suddenly he's got Jesus in front of him. He's looking at Jesus' life. And he's looking at what Jesus did and his attitude. And his in that conversation with his mum where he said the wrong thing, was that can I find that in Jesus' record? Actually, it turns out, no, Jesus was perfect. He never did anything wrong in his entire life. He said the right thing to all the people at the right time that made the best difference in their lives. He never sinned. He was perfect. Suddenly we've got in the stand, instead of us, Jesus. Not our own efforts of putting us there. We've got Jesus being judged. And that's how we get into heaven. And I really wanted Phil to be... Oh, yeah, he isn't here good now. So a VPN, routes your traffic, your internet through a proxy. Phil will understand that more than anyone, I'm sure. Philip, number two, which I don't know how you order yourselves. rather than the press that come from you. So when you are praying and asking God for something, and you're feeling ashamed because something you've just done wrong, you've just had a conversation where you messed up, you're angry, currently angry at somebody. When you're asking God for something, don't go in with shame. Just go in saying, God is hearing Jesus speak to him now. Is he going to deny Jesus what I need, what I'm asking for? He's not. If that helps you realize how important you suddenly have become to God, you've become as valuable to God as Jesus is himself. You know, God treats each one of us as he treats Jesus when you've accepted Jesus. And that's a transformation that none of us can achieve in any other way. It's not something we can work hard at. I can't become Jesus, but I can accept Jesus and get him to stand in my stead whenever I'm being accused of anything, which is, it's amazing. It's a legal trick that God let us play to get us out of trouble. And I like it a lot. So when God looks at us, he sees Jesus. The next slide. Christ is our VPN. So I was talking about gold earlier, and I was thinking this slide is actually next. But yeah, gold is useful. It gets us from where we are here, stuck in our church. It gets us into the nations around the world to see other people, to spread the good news. Because Jesus told us to go spread the good news. Without gold, we won't make it as far as the center of town these days without difficulty. And yet God told these disciples who had sandals in their 2 feet, and that was it, to spread the word to every nation, to every continent. And gold really helped with that. So back in the day in my church, I'd often hear it about missionaries living by faith, it was called. And as I've grown up and grown older and seen how churches act, it's not actually by faith when you're a missionary. I mean, the individual, the mission, has faith that they will have their needs met every day, but it's paid for with gold. You know, we have bank accounts as a church. We have treasuries that we build up so that we can do great missions. We have ministries that run on the back that the fact that they're funded by the church. So if you do have the heart for mission, don't be thinking, I don't have the gold for it. I don't have the cash in the bank account to make this happen. If you are hearing from God to go on mission, then just tell somebody, and amazingly, stuff will happen. Coralie's testified about it, and I've experienced it as well. John has experienced it. The needs will be met as you step out. And the truth about mission and going out there is that there are far fewer people willing to get up and make the effort and put themselves into uncomfortable situations to spread the good news than there are who are quite happy to pay for somebody to do that. So if you need the money, there's someone, as a brother, a sister, who's really willing to pay for you to do that. So if you're feeling hamstrung by the fact that you're not wealthy, you've not got a bank account that's ready to buy a flight at the moment, don't be. Reach out and God will provide. God makes sure that everyone is, you know, to the fact that you can turn five loaves and two fish into feeding 5,000 people, you can do the same thing today. He's not any less powerful today than he was then. And so gold is useful, but God's church has plenty. We are resourced, and you can be. If you're willing to work, to go out there and do something like this, then we can make it happen. It's awesome. So next slide. Oh, and just as a reminder, this area you see on the news a lot. Pray for it. Pray for Israel. Pray for Jordan. Pray for Lebanon. Pray for Iraq and Iran and Egypt and Syria. Pray for all these nations, because that's where a lot of the Bible is based. A lot of the prophecies about what's happened in the past and what will happen in the future is all about in this area. And so, you know, learn about it, hear things, be encouraged to pray for the people in the area, because a lot of the change that we're going to see Jesus' kingdom really come is through those nations. And that's why, you know, Coralie and Mary were there. It was to make sure that we've got Christian good news, Jesus' writings and teachings being heard by people in that area in particular. And it's it's a really needful bit of work. So next slide, please. So heaven, what's it going to look like? Well, it's going to be full of people exactly like this church. We're going to be all different backgrounds. We're going to be all different looks and experiences. We're all going to be different in terms of our abilities, our skills, our what we've achieved in life. Heaven's going to be filled with people like that. And if you're expecting heaven on earth, then what you're expecting is for this to be like heaven. Because these are the people, you know, the people next to you are the people that are going to heaven. So that's what heaven's going to be like. And so let's make more people like we have sitting next to us. Let's be encouraged that we don't have to be perfect to get ourselves and say the right thing to get someone into a relationship with God. We just have to be ourselves and tell the truth. You know, if you don't really believe something, don't try teaching it. Only say something to somebody else if you really believe it. You know, you can work a muscle and build up your faith and your confidence in something, but unless you believe it in your heart, you know, don't try saying it. But as soon as you do believe it and you know it's true for you, you've experienced it, then do share, and it will transform people's lives. Because people see through people who are just putting up a polish, who are trying to be holy or worthy and say the right thing, they see through that. It's not going to get, you know, it's not going to make a difference in people's lives. We've just got to be real. We've got to be honest. And if you do have a truth, and we do have truths, we learn things that have transformed ourselves, share them. So Jesus is populating heaven with people who are poor in spirit, people who know that they need him. Do you know you need Jesus? You need Jesus in the stand instead of you when it comes to being judged? Yeah, I need that more than anything else. That's what heaven is going to be full of. People who are poor in spirit, who know they've messed up. The pure in heart, who live in honesty. So don't try and be deceptive. Don't try and to give the persona you're better than you are. Just be real. that will be what Jesus uses to transform someone's life. Be honest. The peacemakers who bring his kingdom. So don't be looking to stir things up. Just be looking to say the right things to the right people that will bring peace, that will bring calm, that will give them that respite from the arrows and daggers of the world, the hard work, the grind. Give them that space that you can receive and you've experienced when you can go to prayer times with Jesus. Look to share that. And it's the persecuted who stand for righteousness. So if you can't remember being persecuted, here's an encouragement. Try and find something to say to somebody that will get you a little bit persecuted. Doesn't have to be big, but just try and push the boat out a little bit. Needle somebody that you know is going to react when sharing your faith. Think about doing that, because that's probably what God's asking you to do next, is to try and be that little bit more bold. To
Maybe try that, guys.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, that gets someone's hackles up, doesn't it? Jesus loves you. But it's true. Jesus loves them. Yeah. So let's be honest. Let's try and find a bit of persecution in our daily walk. And we'll start living as citizens in heaven today. Did I have another one? I think the last one is just some promo piece. So the slides from this talk is actually from an animation, a video that's really good. It's by a ministry who does open source Christian materials, and that's worth a watch. And it's website's full of things that you can share with other people. So even if you're just pushing the boat out and giving someone a link to go and watch something because you're not bold enough to say it yourself, try that. Try doing a bit of spam on somebody, and these links will get you to the website that I've got the Beatitudes, the Sermon on the Mount, as an animation, which is really engaging. And of course, there's our church website as well that these talks go up onto. Send people to it, hear the good word. Gene's experienced this preaching over Facebook. It's not quite as good as the real thing, but but it helps out, and it can make a difference to one of us, and it can make a difference to someone out there as well. So do be sharing what we are working on. Good. Well, I have entirely neglected to prep for communion, but if someone could be getting the communion ready, I'll try and think of something to say. So, Jesus comes, puts all this effort into coming to earth, becoming flesh and blood. He did all this with the purpose of reaching out to you directly and personally. And he did this for 12 people in particular, in his disciples. He really wanted to make an impact on their lives to the extent that they become transformational. And, the whole world is changed off the back of those 12 people. And when Jesus was no longer, when we killed Jesus, the 12 disciples were left. And we harassed them until they were all dead as well. But off the back of that work, there's those 12 people, we've got a message that's going out to the whole world. And we are reaching more areas, deeper areas of the world than we ever have before. And that's why you know about Jesus. And that's why anybody you've ever met knows about Jesus, because of those 12 people. It's an incredible testimony. So you can be a part of that, spreading the good news. But on his last night on earth, Jesus got together with those 12 people, his people he'd chosen to spend most time with, to make a biggest impact with, and he wanted to share a meal with them. And that's what we do when we take communion. Must be coming in for communion. So when we're eating this meal, what we're remembering is what Jesus did on his last night on earth. And in that meal, he asked his 12 disciples, do this regularly. Remember me by having some bread, having some wine, and remembering what I'm here for, what I've done all this for. And as Jesus was saying this to his disciples, he broke the bread and said, "This represents my body broken for you." Because Jesus knew that the next day he was going to die. He was going to be killed. And so as we're taking this bread, we're breaking it, and we're breaking it in remembrance that Jesus knew that he was about to die. We get some more juice coming around. So we broke the bread knowing that, he broke the bread knowing he was going to die. And so when we break this bread in communion, that's what we're doing as well. We're remembering Jesus, how he was feeling at the time. We're remembering the fact that he'd chosen that last night on earth to be with his 12 disciples, to be with his church. And he wanted them to remember him. And he wanted those disciples to teach us to remember him in the same way. So that's all we're doing when we take this bread. That's all we're doing when we drink the wine. We're remembering what Jesus did. And if you know Jesus already, then it's a refresher and it's something really worthwhile doing. And so within this little micro meal, you can ask God for things, and you can receive incredible healing within your own body, within your own mind, from remembering what Jesus did. Because everyone Jesus touched got healed. It was incredible. You can receive that healing through this meal. And if you want to receive something in particular, you know, a commission, a mission, then yeah, talk to Jesus about it in this meal as well. He wants to be remembered for what he did, but he also wants to hear what you're going to do with him next. So let's do that now. Let's take a moment, think about what we're going to do with him next. And take the bread, as we remember. And so, just as it turned out that on that night, one of those 12 were going to betray Jesus, and Jesus knew it, and he still broke bread with him, Jesus is willing to forgive anything and everything, and that's what is represented in here. He will die for you, and that's what we remember. So let's drink this cup, remembering that as well. So Lord, we just thank you for the life that you lived, the sacrifices you made while alive, and the ultimate sacrifice you made in death. And we thank you that we are only here and hearing this good news about the exciting relationship we can have with you and with God again. We can see God face to face. We can get our shiny faces back. Is because you were willing to put the work in and come to earth and make that happen. So we just thank you for it, Jesus. And we want to think about our next step with you, what it is that's going to make a difference for those around us, for our neighbors, our family, our friends, the words that we're going to say that you're going to give us, and see our nation transformed and the world transformed, right down to the very last people on earth, that we'll have that opportunity to make that choice to know you as well. We just thank you for your constant care, Lord, and pray that we have good weeks coming up.